It's 8:13 on the ticket Thursday morning with the Musers. George, I just want to thank you for introducing me to this show because I love it. It is right up my alley in so many different ways.
I thought you guys would, and I guess ultimately we have to thank my son who told me about it. He started watching it a few weeks back. I'd never heard of it before he told me about it. It's called Alone, and we're into season 6 now. It's being shown on Netflix. It was originally shown on the History Channel. And the basic idea here is it's a reality survival show, but it's unlike any survival show that I've seen. 10 contestants dropped by helicopter. This season is in the subarctic Canadian wilderness. Unlike Survivor, Naked and Afraid, there's no unofficial food sources. There's no cameramen or producers who are with you. You are truly alone as you're dropped in a very remote area, and you have to face the elements. You have to hunt, fish, trap for your food, build shelter. The only footage we have is that taken by the contestants who have GoPros, and sometimes they put them on their head, sometimes they'll put them on a tripod. I think they are maybe coached there before they get dropped off on how to do that. They give themselves enough coverage, and so we see what's going on and how they're gathering their food and what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. It's more dangerous than any other survival show that I've seen. There are bears in this area, wolves, you can be trampled by a moose, and then they're all preparing for, they're dropped late fall, they're preparing for the winter ahead if they make it that far, because the contest is 10 contestants are dropped, the last one standing wins, and they win $500,000. So that is the motivation for them to sign up for this. And it's not just your average Joes who get dropped there. They are, I guess, in what they do for a living, what their wealth is, but they are experts. They are either experts at fishing, hunting, survival techniques, sometimes all three. Some of them have military experience. They've had training. Some of them are still... they serve as trainers to people on survival techniques and how to hunt and fish. And the thing that drew me in about this show, it is just so raw from how they hunt. They show the hunt. They show the kill from a guy knocking down a squirrel with a bow and arrow at 40 yards. I mean, putting it through his ears. They're amazing hunters making lures to fish. And they show them gutting animals, whether it's a muskrat or a mouse or a moose.
They'll eat anything
to survive, and they go in with nothing. And as far as food goes, now they are given supplies. That's the other fascinating thing. They got a long list to choose from. You get 10 items. What do you take? Are you more apt to take an axe? What weapon do you take? The bow and arrow? Can you not shoot one anyway? Do you just try to trap?
Mm-hmm.
Do you fish? It's really graphic, and they show them skinning the animals. I think a lot of people have probably never seen that before. If you've never seen a deer gutted or if you've never cleaned a fish, that's pretty graphic. They really show them getting sick because that's the other thing. The food you're eating may have worms in it. It may be tainted in some way. And that's the part that's really tough to watch, not only because sometimes I get a little queasy watching what they go through, but when they tap out, they have a communicator. I guess it's a two-way radio, Gordo?
Yeah.
Some sort of phone? Two-way radio.
It may be a satellite phone, but it looks like a two-way radio is what it seems like they're using.
Where they call the officials, and they will come in by boat and take them away.
And say, I officially quit, and then they come in and extract them from their situation.
And whether it's day two, like the guy who broke his leg, or into the first week when you feel like you're starving to death already because you just can't find enough food.
The worst is season 3 that Junior mentioned, the guy who tapped out in day 2 because he missed his family.
Day 2!
That was so stupid. I was so mad
at that guy. I don't know
how
that guy got in it, because most of these people are really tough and the things that they put up with. But you see them, and there's a real emotional moment to it that's not... I don't think it's fake. I think they are really broken, whether it's been 2 days and they're disappointed, or it's just they're starting to go a little crazy because they've been by themselves for 9 days. They haven't eaten in 9 days. And when they tap out and make that call, all of them start crying. And they're just devastated because the other motivating factor here, and Gordo, you mentioned this yesterday, and we just briefly talked about this. All of them seem to be, at least in season six, those who really need the money. They're taken from pretty tough situations anyway, and they're doing it because maybe this can give them the break to get out of debt, to put them where they can better take care of their family. And that part of it is additionally sad and emotional. But regardless of how much money they have in the
bank. Have you watched episodes since I brought up that aspect of it?
Yeah, and I do look at it differently. You're right about that. Yeah,
it just, there's some part of it that seems a little bit more exploitative once you notice how much these people are so desperate for this life-changing $500,000, and they're almost willing to die to try to get their family this money. Yep. I mean, they are really risking it, and it just adds an extra sad element to it. But yes, one of the takeaways, the two main takeaways for me so far have been gratitude for how easy our modern lives have become.
Yeah.
And the thin margin between life and death that it would take if we actually tried to scratch out a sustenance and survivability on the land. I mean, it is just unbelievable what all we take for granted. So I come away with gratitude, first of all. And secondly, I see that it's made me much more appreciative of the fact that surviving is as much a mental game as it is a physical game.
Yep. Yep.
And to see what isolation does to these people, which are self-selected loners, for the most part, a lot of them are go-their-own-way type people who have lived kind of like this for a good portion of their lives because that's what they're interested in, you know, that's what fascinates them. But even them, when you put them in extreme lonely situations, how the human machine is not designed to live in isolation, that they crave interaction so much.
Yeah.
And well, crave cooperation, that it takes a village. I mean, for all of us to survive, it does take other people to survive.
Yeah, the thing that has really hit me watching this is it's tapped into something that I've been obsessed with since I was a kid, and that is, could I survive if I was dropped here? I think about that every time I take a plane ride. I look down when you're over this vast emptiness in some part of America or the world. Every single time I'm on a plane, I look and I think, what if I was just dropped right there?
Mm-hmm.
How would I make it work with what I have? So, yes, it's very interesting to see some will take an axe. Some will take whatever would make starting a fire easier. Some will take this wire. Does everybody take a tarp?
I think so.
That's a standard issue.
That's part of the standard issue.
Yeah. So you use that for your shelter.
I wonder if fire making stuff is also part of standard issue.
No. I saw a guy with a lighter, I thought, in season three.
Yeah, a fire starter. You have that choice. Remember that guy in season six said, man, I wish I would have taken the fire starter. I thought I could do it on my own.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a choice.
So that choice, and the whole puzzle aspect of it to me is fascinating. Just, I love it. The second they're dropped in their space of nothingness and they start looking around, okay, this spot looks like it'll be good for shelter tonight, mm-hmm. but I got to find higher ground tomorrow. I can't be below this tree because of Widowmaker limbs falling on me, so I've got to be up against this. I can't be too close to this game trail.
There's 1,000 variables.
It's unbelievable. It's so stimulating to me to take in all those variables and to watch how these people mm-hmm. solve the puzzle. I love it.
Knowing that 40 below temperatures are ahead. So you don't need just a shelter.
Yeah.
But you need something that's going to cushion that blow of a northern wind.
And you've got to keep a fire going all the time.
Keep a fire
going.
You've got
predators out there.
Yep.
Big time predators.
Yeah. Bears, wolves.
This is my fear. I think this show will come to an end like all TV shows do when the interest level drops, and I'm not sure when that'll be, or if somebody dies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very, very possible.
I would hate it if, first of all, I'd hate it if someone died. That's horrible.
Yes.
But I'd also hate it if they canceled the show because someone died, because isn't that what makes the show
right.
good? Is the fact that that these people are truly in peril.
But if somebody gets eaten by a bear, season's over, show's over. You don't get the... I don't care what sort of liability disclaimer that person signed. Show's over, right?
I don't waiver. Know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Waiver? Yeah, in today's world, I bet you it would end. But then that goes to show you the fake danger that they're in. If they feel pretty sure that no one's going to die, then they need to stop playing up the danger of the predators.
Right. So you think they may have a security team nearby?
I don't see how they could.
Or something?
I don't see how they could. I mean, I think that the risk of death has to be very real.
Yes, and you have that satellite phone to get to, but what is that
going to do you in a bear attack?
A bear attack, no good. If you fall and you get stuck in a rock and you just...
That's
there.
The other thing. You have to trust that these people are going to carry their communicators with them at all times.
And I haven't seen that, and I haven't read about that. They would have to, though, right? In case you did run into some sort of trouble where you were stuck and you fell and...
Yeah. Guys, a bear's about to attack me. Okay, we'll be there in an hour and a half.
But the guy who broke his leg, he somehow made it back to his communicator. I don't think he had it with him.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think you're allowed not to carry it with you.
Mm. I don't think the show ends if somebody dies because it's a competition. They've all signed endless waivers, I'm sure. When Dale Earnhardt went into the wall, NASCAR didn't stop. It just added an element of danger that the fans like, whether they admit it or not, they like that. And I think it would make the show ratings go up because that element of danger is real.
Yeah, but somehow TV shows are considered different. I'm with you, and I think a logical argument can be made. This is a competition, the same way that automobile racing is a competition. And you don't end the sport or the competition due to the fact that someone died.
Right.
You know that going into it.
Yep.
But I guarantee you that producers would... There would be an outcry from people that, hey, they need to quit the show.
It's too cruel.
It's making people... It's cruelty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, so here are some of the other injuries from past seasons. Season one, Sam, the runner-up, lost 90 pounds in 55 days.
Mm.
He made it 55 days. That's pretty amazing, but he lost 90 pounds. Another one came back with post-traumatic stress disorder.
I think all of them come back with post-traumatic stress
disorder. I wondered that, too, how many of them have it. One guy called in, and when they got out there, and by the way, you're checked weekly. A medical team comes out and checks you weekly. But one guy from season one, Dave, he was hallucinating so bad that he was hoarding food even though he was starving to death.
Oh, that's Dave in season three, wasn't it?
Oh, it may have been season three. I had it down in season one.
Yeah, he still had like 32 halves of fish, but he was wasting away, and they pulled him because his BMI dropped so low that he was in starvation and was at risk of going into massive organ failure. But he was trying to parcel out his food to stay for another 2 months, but his body was almost skeletal.
And so he almost died.
Yeah, I mean, he got that close, and he had all this food, and imagine his heartbreak, because he was one of the last three, I think, that were still left at the time, and they had to pull him, and he's like, but I have all this food here, and they're like, well, you didn't manage it right, because your body's dropped too low, and we're going to have to pull you for medical reasons.
And don't you feel their misery, too, for those who maybe go 8 or 9 days, and they talk about, I haven't eaten in 9 days, I've got to find something to eat besides berries, I've got to catch a fish, I just feel their misery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's somewhat overwhelming. I've never felt like that watching a TV show before.
There's so much human suffering.
Yeah.
And it's so right up Junior's alley. I mean, think about cycling. That's what that sport lives off of, is suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is watching nonstop human suffering. Because you have the compounding effects of someone hasn't eaten in 9 days, so they're starving. And they're starving, so they make poor decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes them lift a fish too high out of the water when they finally do catch something. And then it goes off the hook, and they're like, oh, that was so stupid. I know not to do that. But you can't think straight when you're so hungry.
Like the girl who injured herself because she accidentally punctured herself with an arrow. And then if you do get an injury, you've got a first aid kit, but what if you do get the infection? That can knock you out. Or like the guy who broke his leg, that can easily knock you out.
It also, and like I was talking about before, that razor-thin margin, it's like even in the best of circumstances, you are basically only have an even odds chance of surviving if you were out there in the wild for real and this wasn't a TV show. You know, you can't afford one hiccup. You know, the one thing going wrong of cutting yourself and it getting infected can set you back, because if you miss a day or two of hunting, then you're toast.
Yep.
Things spiral. Things compound on you like that.
By the way, we should let the people who haven't seen the show know that to win, you generally need to be able to go about 60 to 75 days.
Right.
That's about what the winner usually goes. It depends sometimes on where they're dropped. There might be harsher weather conditions. But 2 to 3 months, that's a long, long time living off the land and being alone. That is an eternity.
You know, and in season, is it season 3 or season 4? That was the day that you were talking about and the guy that quit after 2. That's season 3, right?
Yeah, 3.
So I've watched that entire season, and I've watched the entire season, the Arctic seasons, which is season 6. And in season 3, you also start doing that. Don't the watching them make you nervous when you see them doing any activity that you're going, that's too many, they're doing too many calories on this activity,
yes,
right here?
Yeah.
Because everything becomes this balance of what do you allocate your calories to?
Yes.
Because you've got to be doing those calculations constantly of, is the expenditure worth what I can get out of it? And when you start seeing people undertaking the arts and crafts projects that I'm thinking, don't waste energy and time on that. What are you doing? But yet, a lot of those people went deep into the competition. I'm very fascinated by the gender difference, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's women in it who do, at least I'm watching season 6, and they're hanging in there.
Because the gender stereotypes in some ways hold true in this, too, which is that these women tend to be built for marathons, and the men tend to be built for sprints. And these women doing these arts and crafts projects, I think they keep their minds healthier.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Than the guys who sit there and just lay there doing nothing, or they're doing extreme hunting.
Did you like the guy who carved himself out of tree bark an entire deck of cards,
right,
to pass the time playing solitaire?
Yeah.
I loved that. So
another guy made a chess set for himself, and yeah. What do you do with your time to keep your mind occupied?
Boy, and yeah, I'm so impressed with their ability to
talk about the TV show alone, by the way,
as we were
joining us.
You find a rusted can, mm-hmm, and one guy found 2 or 3 of them. So I'm thinking, okay, he's going to use that to, you know, maybe use it as his drinking cup or to purify water in. He makes fishing lures out of it.
Yeah, he made fishing lures out of it. Some other guy uses cans, you know, to do an early detection system for predators walking through his camp.
Yeah, make an alarm system with string and a can. Making fishing lures out of a bone. The one woman who finds an old barrel, what that was doing out there, I have no idea. But she uses that as a flotation device to float her lures out to fish. It's really impressive what they come up with.
Find.
Yeah.
And these people that know how to build a trap, you know, to trap a squirrel or a hog or whatever.
Yeah.
Know how to make 30 different kinds of snares.
Yes. Really impressive. The ones that know how to start a fire, I think that's what I would struggle with because I've never looked into that. The ones that know how to build shelter, you think it's easy, but so much thought goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
How about that one guy whose shelter caught on fire because he let his fire get out of control for just a second?
Yeah, that was when he was one of the final 3,
yeah,
too. And that really makes me crazy when you've already gone 75 days of extreme suffering, and then you're kicked out either due to your weight dropping too low, or in this case, one little spark went and burned up his whole shelter. Mm. And he obviously had no energy to rebuild a shelter. You know, there's no replacing that. And that makes me think of, if these were real people who were dropped in the middle of nowhere with nothing, imagine being naked. Imagine not having the waterproof boots. Imagine having to fashion your clothes out of some buckskin that you find somewhere.
How
impossible it is to survive on this land.
Mm-hmm.
I think between the three of us, Gordo would last the longest.
I doubt it.
I can't even catch fish with modern day equipment. That would be the only thing. And I'm a decent shot, but you can shoot a bow and arrow.
Right.
if you gave me a few days, I may figure out a snare. Maybe I could trap a rabbit or something, but
there's so much to know.
I don't think I'd last more than a day or two.
I mean, those people are impressive. They get like any kind of spore that they can track. Okay, this looks like this is a chipmunk. Okay, this scat here is canine related. This scat is this.
Yeah,
they know the tracks.
Think about
all the stuff that we just don't know.
I know. I've thought about this a lot watching this show. I think physically and mentally, I'm up for the task. I think I could last for a while. But I don't know how to do so much of what they do. And so I think I've got an advantage physically and mentally because I like to be alone. And yes, I've spent, like you said, Gordo, my whole life suffering physically. That's what I do for fun. So I think that could carry me. But I'm at a terrible disadvantage in that I'm not a hunter. I don't know how to start a fire. I could probably figure out the shelter thing, but I don't know how to build a trap. You got to have the whole package if you're going to last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And even if you do, one thing goes wrong, you're done.
Yeah.
3 days in, 30 days in,
whatever. One little hiccup, and yeah, you're done.
If I could take a crash course on survival and learn how to build a fire and all of that, then I would love to try this. It mm-hmm. looks awesome to me, which I think is, you better have that attitude going in, right?
Yeah.
You've got to be excited about the challenge and the adventure, or else you're toast after a day.
I get nervous any time that they're setting up a character and they're making bold claims about themselves or seeming too confident.
Yeah. Yeah. When I win this, and I'm going to win it because I can.
Oh, just don't say anything like that. Stop it.
And you know,
stop
the angle,
you're taunting God.
The angle of the less fortunate and the act of the whole thing being an act of desperation and how it feels exploitative. Can't you also spin it to where this show is giving them a chance and they have free will and they chose to take this chance?
And sure, you can.
They're adults and they're doing this. They made this decision and they do have the opportunity to win $500,000, which in life they would not have.
Sure, you can. But imagine a rich guy having a $100 bill that he's trolling through a trailer park or something like that, and everybody's scrambling after that. You could still make that argument about him, but you'd still feel queasy about it.
I kind of like, though, that it's the common men or common women that are in it more than just the rich dude from Fifth Avenue's coming in there all Chris. Yeah, no problem.
I'd love it if that guy did it, though. I mean, to me, I would respect that guy that was doing it because he doesn't have none of his wealth matters out there.
Well, that's true. But
if he's able to do it, then that's great. Then he has the metal to do it.
All right, coming up next, I believe we're going to visit with someone who was on the show alone. Stay with us. First, in this segment, I would like to talk about the television show Alone. George, again, a thank you, because I am hooked on Alone. We did a big segment on it yesterday at 8:15. George told us about it. Gordo and I started watching it. It's a series on the History Channel that is now also available on Hulu, back episodes and seasons, and on Netflix.
Right in y'all's wheelhouse. Y'all love the survival angle of things.
It's so great. It really is. And I watched 3 more episodes last night. I am just hooked on it.
What season are you going on?
So this is season 3, Patagonia.
Okay.
Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen any of that. I'm still working on, I'm going to get through 6, the one that's being played right now on Netflix, and then...
That's the Arctic, right?
The Arctic, yeah. And then we were informed, I didn't realize this, it's rolling right now on the History Channel, season 7.
Yeah, did you see the change they made? The prize is now $1 million.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
And it should be. I always felt uncomfortable with the $500,000 figure.
Me too. It's a little cheap for a show like that.
Yeah. I mean, with that much suffering, you should at least get $1 million. There's some psychological breakthrough on the $1 million. Anything under the $1 million doesn't feel, you know, yes, it can be life-changing, but it doesn't feel like, well, like $1 million is the reason there's a phrase. Boy, I feel like $1 million.
And you hear the contestants saying, man, if I just win this $500,000, I'm set for life. I'll never have to work again. And I'm thinking, well, the government's going to take a chunk of that.
Right.
I don't know that you're set for life.
I don't think you are.
So anyway, if you're not familiar with the show, and we've been talking about it a lot, but a very quick synopsis. They drop 10 people off in the wilderness, all a good distance apart, so they're alone. And they have survival items, and we'll go through this list here in just a second because I've got questions about that. They each have a couple little GoPro cameras, so they film everything that they're doing. And you have to live off the land. You have to hunt and fish and forage and build your shelter and build your fire and all of that. And when you need to tap out, you tap out. Last man or woman standing wins the grand prize. So it's really, really entertaining. And as I told you guys yesterday, I love the puzzle of how to make this work. And especially in this Patagonia one, some people drew the short straw. Like some people got a nice bit of land that they were plopped down on, and others got screwed, in my opinion.
Yeah, I know.
It is. How about the guy in the Arctic one who got dropped off where there'd been big fires over the last year?
Yeah.
It's like everything around me has been devastated.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that's fair.
That's Jordan who was dropped off there, I believe.
Okay. Yeah.
By the way, also, since I'm obsessed with Alone, I listened to the first half of his interview with Joe Rogan.
Yeah. It's kind of cool listening to him. He's so, like, happy and stuff.
Yeah. Doesn't he seem like the greatest guy?
Yeah.
Just
love
so
listening
nice.
To him.
He's pretty smart. He's had a lot of experience. As he said, it's probably unfair that it was him against everybody else in that episode because he's had a lot of experience living off the land. And anyway, yesterday watching the Patagonia series, and there was one guy who was dropped in a spot that after 10 days or so, he realized, wow, I don't get sun. He got sun like in day one and two. And then for the final 5 or 6 days, you know, of that first 10-day stretch, he didn't get any sun. Sun didn't hit his land. And he started to go a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to, the next day, he decided, I got to hike up to that ridge and soak in some rays. And that was one of my big takeaways last night, was how primal the whole thing is. And how just after 5, 6, 7 days, when you are alone and you're having to live off the land, how you turn into an animal.
Yeah.
In a good way, because I think it taps into what we are. And even Jordan talked about that with Rogan. He said, you know, I'm out there and I'm happy because this is what we're supposed to be doing. This is what we've done for millions of years. And he said, I come back to society and everybody's on their phone and I look around.
He starts feeling society sickness.
Yeah. But this guy having to hike up to this ridge to get some sunshine.
Catch a ray of sunshine.
It just made me feel, wow, we're really animals. Mm-hmm. And to see, you know, the others foraging for berries just to get the right vitamins and having to eat the fish skin so that they get the fat and all this. It just made me realize what incredible creatures we are, number one, and how we, when put in a situation like that, that's what rises to the top. We need sun rays for our vitamin D, and we need these berries for our vitamin C, and we just go into pure survival mode, and that is really cool.
You know, I remember that from the Aaron Ralston story, too, that 127 days, I think was the name of it. Remember when, if you recall the movie, which is the only thing I've seen, I haven't read his book, he was the guy who got his arm trapped between the boulder and the wall and had to break his own arm in order to free himself, cut off his own arm. But yeah, there were moments in that movie where he just waited for that sun. He had only like 10 minutes a day when the sun would come through the crevice and his face would be bathed in sunlight. And it was like this heavenly 10 minutes that he would have every day when he actually got sun on his face.
Mm-hmm.
When you're constantly figuring out if you're one of the contestants on Alone, is this worth the energy I'm going to spend on this?
Yeah.
Whether it's going up to get sunlight or, as it turned out, it was worth it for Jordan got the moose, right?
And, yeah.
Yeah. You know, should I chop down all these trees to make basically a natural fence to draw him into this one area? Turns out it was worth it. But, yeah, just
that's chopping down a lot of trees. You're expending so many calories in the hopes that it'll pay off.
Yeah. And I mean, remember when he was doing that, I was thinking, he's going to do all this, and he's still not going to get the moose.
Right. Yeah, you see how much things are gambles. Think of your Think of your calorie expenditure as money, as chips at a gambling casino.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gambling, you're betting the chips that you have and just praying you don't go bankrupt,
mm-hmm.
praying that you'll win this hand and actually get this moose because you've expended, you know, 10,000 calories trying to set up the world in which the moose comes towards you.
The physical game is incredible to watch. The mental game is incredible to watch. You can tell in the first week the people who are going to crack mentally. You can tell right away.
Yeah.
Like that guy who tapped out on day two.
Because he missed
it. It was ridiculous.
Wait till you get to the end of this season. Most of these seasons seem to be around 11 episodes.
The Patagonia season?
Yeah, the Patagonia season, season three. Because they do a reunion episode, an episode 12 in that season. That is a reunion episode, and they talk with him, and they bring back all the contestants together, and they're all laughing because he gets up there, and I forget what his opening joke was. It was really funny, but they also showed a picture of him that he had tweeted out, I think, after the series ran. It's him down by the stream, and he put a caption on it that says, "I went to Patagonia for season three of Alone, and I stayed just long enough to get this picture." And it's him smiling, getting water out of the stream.
All right, so I've been watching this series with someone who's in my house a lot.
Uh-oh.
I have too.
And they happen to be
Not going over as well with them?
Oh, no. She loves it.
Okay.
Does she get squeamish, though?
No.
When they're eating muskrat or mouse?
She's bringing an interesting angle to it in that she is in television, and she is bringing up some of the production aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
And she questions whether a lot of this is just from their GoPro. And it's got me thinking about it, too, because she says some of these shots are just way too perfectly framed. How did they get that close-up of that? It doesn't match with where they're standing. And so this is my next question to you guys.
A lot too.
How much outside production help, extra cameras? Every once in a while, do you think the show sends a cameraman in there and stays with the person for a day or so? How do you think they're doing that?
So I haven't done any research on this. I'd love to dive into Reddit and some other places where people will discuss this. But I think that they do have people that probably go in and set up other GoPros. Like, once you have the person's shelter, they probably have maybe a consultant that comes in and says, okay, I'm going to strap a GoPro over here on this side of the wall of your shelter. That'll just be there all the time. You need to change the cards out every other day and so on. They probably have a consultant who helps those contestants by setting up additional GoPros. Because there's many cameras that those contestants have.
Yeah.
And one of the guys in the reunion episode that I mentioned, he mentions the cameras. He says that that is a drain on contestants having to always worry about and having to always film.
It would beat me down.
Because especially once you get towards the later days when you're just so tired you don't want to do anything. I wonder about how they're recharging these batteries on the cameras. There's got to be a solar system there that's recharging the batteries.
That was my first question. If you're out there for 3 months, you got to recharge that GoPro every other day,
right?
At least.
Mm-hmm.
Do they bring them different batteries on their well check each week?
I'm assuming that on all the wellness checks, they're having to do also technical stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they couple it up with that.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, they do it then. My question is, do they do additional technical visits?
Do they have a giant charging pack that they leave that's good for a week?
They must have, because you'll notice in some of those shots that the contestants will be, you know, talking to camera, but the contestant is like sitting on a big Pelican case, which is, you know, like a travel case for audiovisual equipment.
Right. Okay.
So I think they are loaded up with audiovisual equipment. I mean, they have lots of it there. They have lots of GoPros.
Yeah.
But are they in charge of all of the GoPros they have, or do they have someone that comes in, you know, and scrapes the cards every once in a while, you know, comes in and exchanges the cards? I mean, they don't leave those people out there with, you know, 70 days worth of footage before they retrieve it.
Right.
You can't risk a contestant doing something that loses all the footage from that contestant.
Right.
Yeah, and maybe on those wellness checks, I mean, you only need a minute to 3 minutes of some really well shot video. Maybe they do some of that. Hey, walk over the, whatever you're about to do, go do that, and we'll shoot that before we leave.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, get some shots so they know that they need.
With 10 contestants, and all of a sudden you've got a lot of video.
Like some of the nature close ups.
Yeah.
You know, a bird.
Right.
Pretty shot of a bird in a tree that's perfectly focused.
Uh-huh.
I doubt the contestant got that.
No.
It's probably one of their cameramen. All right. Let's talk about their gear choices and their list of 10 survival items that most of them take with them. Air wire, multi-tool, frying pan, gill net, pocket knife, shovel, paracord. Of those, which one, which next four or five would you guys take?
Man, sounds like all of them right there for me. But
you got to have a knife and a multi-tool, right? Or maybe use your knife as your multi-tool. Maybe that's a bit redundant.
Right.
You know, the one that I would take for sure that I've seen more people use is an axe.
Yeah.
You know, for the
for
ice.
For building the shelter.
For building your shelter, for trees. I think
but
that
the
one
saw
would really
is pretty important,
handy.
Too. I see a lot of people using those
yep.
folding saws.
Mm.
But those are kind of redundant. Those two, the yeah. axe and the saw. So I think you have to choose it. There's an either or there. I think paracord's pretty important too. Cordage is really important to you.
Yes.
You may not think about it, but and paracord in particular is usually what, seven different cords in one?
I think so.
Because you can unbraid a paracord, and I think there's even fishing line inside paracord.
Hmm.
I don't know how much experience you guys have with paracord.
Not much.
But yeah, so I think cordage is pretty important of lashing things together because otherwise you're going to have to make all your own cordage and that would be a beating.
I would definitely take bow and arrow, number one for hunting, but number two, you have endless hours every day to practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I'd build a little target, and after a while, I think I would get pretty good with that because that would also be something to occupy your time.
Is frozen pizza on there?
No.
Didn't make the list.
No. Frying pan? Very few took the frying pan. I guess you cook everything in the large pot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that what you have to do is kind of go through the list and do which ones are close, which ones are the either-ors.
Yeah.
And I would think frying pan and pot would kind of be an either or.
Just another great part of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
A great television show alone. All right, it's 5:58 here on The Ticket.